This podcast is dedicated to those who lost their lives in the helicopter tragedy at the King Power Stadium. The thoughts of everyone at Echoes of Glory are with the friends and families of those who sadly lost their lives. Hello and welcome to Echoes of Glory, Season 8, Episode 10. I'm Jack.
And I'm Kevin.
I'm Sam.
Let's start with Glenn Hoddle. So there's some tragic news that came out about a week ago, almost, about our beloved Glenn, who unfortunately suffered a heart attack at the BT Sports Studios. Fantastic work by all of the emergency services that have obviously helped him. The cameraman, apparently, at the BT Sports Studio, who actually saved his life by using a defibrillator, if the reports on that are correct. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Glenn, because he's your favourite player, isn't he, that you've ever seen?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
And a lot of people of your generation that saw Glenn have all say he's the greatest player that they've ever seen live. So what was it about Glenn that made him such a wonderful player?
I think with Glenn, he's probably, you know, 2 decades before his time in a way, because had he been the player he is today, he would have been at Real Madrid or Barcelona, because he really is that good. Probably still is that good. You know, you see him now, he can still play football. I think it was a different play. He could play with both feet. He had the skill. You have to remember in the 70s, Jack, you know, people used to go out and play dirty, not like nowadays. You know, if he'd have been playing nowadays, he'd have had a lot more protection. You know, you look at all the likes of Ericsson and Ali playing for us, you know, Hoddle is miles ahead of them too.
So for those that didn't see Hoddle or maybe haven't watched much footage of him online, what type of player was he?
I think modern day, if you're a Spurs supporter, you could look at his passing range was like a bit like Tom Huddleston. You know, obviously Tom was probably about 60% of the player Glenn was. But he could run with the ball as well. A lot of people say, oh, he was a bit slow and that. He'd make the tackle still. His passing range, I think, with left and right footed was magnificent. His shooting from outside the box, his free kicks were fantastic. Technically, he still is the finest player I've ever seen.
And if he played in the modern day, where would he play, just for the more for the younger listeners?
I think if you could say he would probably play, I would have him playing probably, say, if you've got, say, Dembele or Dier playing in a holding role for Tottenham, he'd play alongside them because he'd be the one that would bring the ball out. So, like Winks has been playing.
So dictating the play.
Yeah,
and,
of course he would. You know, you'd have
him playing a bit like a Paul Scholes type-ish.
For passing, yeah, without a doubt. But as you see, you know, if you go online and watch some of the stuff, you know, he could run with the ball as well. It was both feet, and I think dropping of the shoulder and getting out of small gaps. He just absolutely had it all. I think hopefully, you know, in the modern day, he'd be used properly by England. 53 caps was a travesty. I mean, we went to Wembley and saw his debut, and he scored from outside the box, and then was dropped, didn't play in the next game. You know, and that's what it was like under Ron Greenwood. It was absolutely scary.
You mentioned that goal for England. What are some of your favourite goals that you saw Glenn score for Spurs?
I know his favourite goal is the volley against Manchester United in the League Cup. The ones I've seen, I was lucky enough to see him live. You've seen the Watford one, which was when he chips it over Sherwood. You've got the Oxford one when he bursts through the players and dummies.
So describe those goals then. So the first one, the chip. Talk us through that goal.
It's a bit like a Cruyff turn, really. You know, he's got his back to a player. He just does a little Cruyff turn, really, inside of the foot, round the player, and then chips a 6'2" goalkeeper from inside the box.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous. Then there was the, you know, the Oxford one when he got the ball in his own half. He just drew 2 defenders in and went basically ran through the middle of them. Basic stuff, dropped his shoulder, took it round the keeper, stroke it in the corner. Lovely goal. Great volley against Nottingham Forest, the one where it didn't touch the floor.
Yeah, that's a great goal.
Jerry Armstrong is involved in that goal. Fantastic goal. And the goal in his debut against Stoke with his left foot from outside the box. Again, that was against Peter Shilton as well. I know one of Stato's favourites is the goal against Liverpool at Anfield, which is an absolutely stunning goal. Must be 30, 35 yards.
What I love about him as well is all the goals that you're describing there, they're all different. Some are him beating defenders, going clean through on the keeper and scoring. Yeah. Some are him smashing it in from 30 yards. Some are curlers. Some are both feet. I just love that all of his goals are different.
Free kicks as well. You know, you look at the free kick nowadays and people want to come and, you know, Ronaldo type free kick. You know, where you want to come and try and put a bit of pace on the ball. A bit like we've seen Trippier doing for England and for Tottenham recently. It was just, let's get the ball over the wall, and you get the ball over the wall and it's in the net. And he was at that mode. But yeah, desperately, desperately sad news. Hopefully he's on the mend. You know, I love him as a commentator. Yeah. He talks so much sense when he commentates. He would have been a big loss, and you know, and I've never managed to meet the great man, which was always hopefully I might.
People always seem to forget as well that he had a spell as manager for us as well, which was fairly unsuccessful, but then we were in a very, very unsuccessful period. What are your memories of him as a manager? Firstly, when we appointed him, what was your reaction?
It was a strange appointment, really, because he replaced George Graham. And George Graham had won...
One extreme to the other.
Yeah, but George Graham had won a trophy the year before. And then, you know, Levy decided to axe him. I think Levy has said it was his heart ruled his head. And it was probably the same for all of us. And it was a shame when it didn't work out. But he hasn't quite cut it as a manager. And player manager he did. And I thought he would have... If he'd have been given more time with England, you know, he got handed out the England job for non-footballing reasons. Comments I think he made, you know, 15 years previous. But I think it was just... he's just before his time on everything.
But a great player... Fantastic pundit. Like, I could listen to him for hours talking about football. So get well soon, Glenn, and hopefully you're back on our screens and back at Spurs in the near future.
Let's hope so.
We've got some games to review, starting with the Champions League game against PSV, which feels like months ago. It's only just over a week or so ago. So the game finished 2-2. We were leading 2-1 in that game with not long left. I actually thought we played fairly well in that match. We created a lot of chances. We looked more dangerous going forward. And then there's a moment of madness from Lloris, who comes absolutely charging out, takes their striker out, red card. In a situation where we had the game under control, couldn't really see them scoring, to then that happens and you've got 10 minutes of absolute chaos. And they scored from it. I mean, Sam, do you think that's the end of our Champions League campaign now?
Yeah, I think it is. Mathematically, we're still in the group, and if you win the remainder of the games, you've got a chance. But yeah, I don't see us getting through from this point.
We've got to beat PSV at home, Inter at home, and Barca away, and hope results go our way. So
I don't think it happened. But I mean, it's the highest level of football, and you can't switch off for even a minute. And it goes to show that no group or no team's easy.
Yeah.
In the Champions League.
Yeah. It was a frustrating one because, like I said, I did feel like we probably created enough to win the game.
Oh, we definitely did. But I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think we were ruthless enough in that game. I think when we got the second goal for most of the second half, me and you were watching it, Dad, and then there was quite a bit of complacency. It was a little bit, in my opinion, it was a little bit casual at times.
Training ground.
Yeah, and I feel in them sort of games, when you can smell blood, so to speak, you've got to go in for the kill and try and see the game off, because against any team in the Champions League, they're always in with a chance of getting back in the game.
I think it was a repeat of the Inter game, unfortunately, where, again, another game you should have won. We was and, you know, we threw it away at the end.
We've
let a lot of goals in late.
Why is that happening?
Season.
Why are we all of a sudden... We look vulnerable in the last 5 minutes of games.
Yeah, we do.
Why is that? What's caused that?
Well, PSV game's a separate thing, because I'm a big fan of Hugo, but if he doesn't make that tackle... 100% we see the game out. Going down to 10 men and having to defend the first...
It gets the crowd up as well. All of a sudden, the opposition have got a bit of energy and they smell blood.
But you've still got to do the basics, which I didn't think we did. We did panic, and I don't know what it is this season. We've looked vulnerable from late in games, but from set pieces in games, which is very uncharacteristic of Pochettino teams.
I think we're giving away, we often talk about it when we're watching games or if we're watching it live, we're giving away too many free kicks in the wide areas again. where we're giving people the opportunity to put the ball in the box. And we're not the tallest team out there. We're not the tallest team out there. We should still be dealing with it. Of course we should. We've still got a few, you know, really good headers of the ball in the team. But I think that's the issue. We've got to stop giving away silly free kicks.
And the difference is as well, especially in the Champions League, you can be a bigger team than the opposition.
Yeah.
If you're given free kicks away in the Champions League, the delivery is always going to be better. And I'm 6'2". I could be marking a player that's 5'10". But if the delivery is perfect, I'm not going to do nothing about it.
You've only got to get half the yard in front of you. It doesn't matter how tall you are.
But I agree with you, Sam. We've looked vulnerable most of the season from set plays, which is a worry. Strange. And it is strange because we're a big aggressive side.
We're a good defensive side as well.
So it is a little bit strange. But it wasn't to be, unfortunately. But I put pretty much all of that draw on Loris.
I do.
Doing what he did.
And also, there's like everything that could have gone wrong in that game did go wrong. I mean, the disallowed goal,
it was disgraceful.
It was disgraceful. I don't know what.
Twice, didn't we?
Everything that could have gone wrong before the Loris sending off did. I think we were massively unlucky up to that point. But I do agree with you. Hugo's decision making has got to improve.
Is he Spurs' number one still?
Yes, 100%.
What do you think?
Yes.
See, for me, I wouldn't be putting Gazzaniga in ahead of him because Gazzaniga, who's been fantastic, and we'll come on to him later because he was brilliant at West Ham again, in the 4 or 5 games he's played for us has been outstanding. He hasn't made a mistake in those games. Incredible. But he's played 5 games. Loris has played however many it is for Spurs, France, or the top level. So I wouldn't contemplate putting Gazzaniga in ahead of him. However, I think Loris as a player has peaked. He can't get any better. He's only going to start to decline now. And I think at the end of the season, that's a position where we're going to have a look and look at alternatives. Because I'm now not convinced that for the next 4 or 5 years, he's going to be our long-term goalkeeper.
I don't know. I think that what's happened outside of football has affected him massively. And I think you can see that in his performances. Yeah. I think he's trying so hard to be the captain and the professional that we know and love. And I think it's a tough spell for him, but I'm sticking with him, stick behind him, and I'm confident he's a World Cup winner, he's a fantastic goalkeeper and a great professional. I have faith that he will be able to push through this and get back to his normal 10 out of 10 form. I
hope so. It just worries you when you've got a goalkeeper that isn't putting the defence on edge, because you can see that a little bit now. The defence are a little bit like, what's the keeper going to do, which is a real...
It's worrying.
Worry.
If you're going to be a top team, you've got to have a top goalkeeper. And we've seen that with other teams, you know. As I said before, you know, in the day of the £70 million goalkeeper, you know, we're not going to be going down that route, are we? Let's be honest
about
it.
But we should be, though.
You know. So,
we should be.
I don't think we should panic yet.
No, nor do I.
No, and like I said, I wouldn't be dropping him and going to the extremes of Gazzaniga has to play every game. But I would be looking at that now and thinking, okay, where's our next step going to be? Who's our next goalkeeper?
I think he'll be aware of it as well, though. I think he realises his performance levels have dropped. So I think he'll be aware.
We've said this a few times on the pod in the last month or so, but it's a really interesting period for Pochettino because this team that he's built is now coming towards an end, and he's going to now have to start looking at, okay, what is my next team going to be? Like what Ferguson did. Every 4 or 5 years,
a
new team would emerge that would be the side for 4 or 5 years. They would age, the next lot would come. And you look at our side, and you've got Loris, performance-wise, not been fantastic. Toby and Jan, outstanding. But if you look at their ages...
Late 20s.
Well, Vertonghen's 31 now. So you do have to start thinking, OK, how long is this player going to be around at that level? Vertonghen's not showing me any signs that he's going to decline. But you do have to think he's probably going to start getting injured a little bit more. And it's just an interesting period that he's now got to start bringing through the next group of players. It is exciting, but it's also a challenge, and it's a unique point for him in his career.
It is.
Because he's not had to do that
and
yet.
And it's buying the right players to fit in around. So, where we've been lucky, where we brought in Dyer and Ali and players like that, you know, 5 years ago for relatively cheap money. Then days have gone, but then players are there if you're prepared to go and get them. I'll come on to something about that later on when we talk about.
Well, there's definitely players in the lower
league. In the lower
leagues,
there's so many players, but you've got to give them a chance and you've got to give them minutes. You've got to give them game time, otherwise they won't develop. If Dele Alli comes as the first season and sat on the bench, he would not be the player he is now.
Which, interestingly, he probably would have done had we not had so many injuries. Because people do forget when he first came.
Someone comes in and does well and you gain a player from nowhere.
Marcus Rashford at United. Yeah, yeah. He was nowhere. Yeah. Injury cross up front, chucked him in.
Yeah.
Look at him now. Fantastic player. Frustrating draw at PSV anyway. Then on Monday night we played Man City at home. Mm. This was a really interesting one because we went into this game for the first time in ages just expecting to be comfortably beaten. Yeah. Behind the team wanting us to win and all that, but that was the first game really for a couple of seasons where I've gone thinking we don't really have much of a chance today. If we got a draw, wow, what an amazing result that would be. And after 4 minutes when Mahrez scored and put City 1-0 up, I was thinking, okay, this could be a cricket score now. And I actually turned to Steve alongside me and said, if you offered me 2-0 City, I'd probably take that now. Because I did fear the worst, that, oh, Christ, this is going to be an absolute annihilation. But you know what? We matched them for large periods of the game. They controlled possession, especially in the first half, and always looked a threat. But then City are always going to do that, aren't they? Whoever they play, they're always going to look a threat. But I think what was interesting from our point of view, especially in the second half, is we really stopped them playing in dangerous areas. You can't stop City playing, no way. Fernandinho is one of the best players in his position in the world. He's an absolutely brilliant player. Similar role to what Busquets plays for Barca. You can't stop him. You can try to restrict him and try to control him a little bit. And in the second half, how many forward passes can you really remember him playing? Not that many. In the first half, every time he got it, it just felt like he was the quarterback, which is probably appropriate given all the NFL branding. Yeah. The ball was going into him and he was just spraying passes left, right and centre.
Yeah.
Pep come out, didn't he, and said that Spurs actually countered them in a really effective way, so that's all credit to Pochettino. But we had enough chances to get a point out of that game.
I think the Lamela one, in the second half, you can blame the pitch, but you're a professional footballer, you should still have your foot over that ball. He missed it by a mile, let's be honest. If it had bobbled and hit the bar, fair enough. But
he was playing the NFL, I think.
It was way over the bar. It was a shame. It was a great move. We exploited Cole Walker like we should be doing.
He had a poor game, actually, Walker.
Yeah, he looked a bit nervous and a bit edgy. He was a bit like, it reminded me when Campbell used to play against us with Arsenal. But no, it's disappointing, I think, that we didn't get a draw, Jack.
Yeah, really, and you mentioned, Sam, the Kane chance in the first half as well.
I was really, really, it was one of the most frustrating reactions I've had to a Spurs game this season, because in my opinion, we should have won the game. I think that Lamela has to score. The pitch didn't help, but he has to score. He had enough time to take a touch. It was a rubbish miss. Harry Kane was excellent throughout the game, playing against one of the best defences in the world, but he goes through. His first touch is heavy.
Yeah.
If that first touch isn't heavy, I'm more than confident he scores. And Sissoko was put in, who had one of the best games I've ever seen him have.
Sissoko.
But his decision making in that, if that was different, I think we should have got Sank out of that game. And it's good that Guardiola's saying we count them very well, and we've played in Pochettino's, like, we're happy with the performance. But if we genuinely want to try and win the title, which is the aim for Spurs, because we're big enough and we're good enough to do it, they're the type of games that I think we need to be ruthless from the beginning. I think we grew very well into the game, but if we started as we meant to go on, I think we could have got at least a draw out of it.
It's a bit fanciful thinking, really, but if we'd have beaten City and Liverpool at home, we'd be top of the league. So
it's fine margin.
I was pleased the way we played against City. We tried something different. We played a few more long balls, nothing wrong with that,
especially second half,
but we battled a bit more in midfield, as you said, and we forced them 10 yards back in the second half, which I thought made a difference.
Yeah. I want to talk about Sissoko as well, because the last few performances he's been putting in, he's not just been playing fairly well. He's been one of the best players on the pitch.
The last two times he played, he has been by far the best player on the pitch.
What's changed with him? Is he playing a different position? Is it just that he's getting a bit more of a run in the team? What do you think has caused this
bit of both performance, Jack, level? He's a good player, whatever way you look at it. He's just not done it for us, but he obviously, he's got it in him. I felt a bit sorry for him that he's often comes on as a sub for the last 15-20 minutes. He's used in various positions, and that can't be easy as a player. One week you're doing this and one week you're doing that, so he helps the team out, and he must be doing something right in training, because otherwise he wouldn't be anywhere near the matchday squad.
I think he looks quite fit at the moment as well, which he's struggled quite a lot to be fully fit and ready for games. He's always had a bit of a niggle, or like you say, he's not got that many minutes, and he's struggled really to be match sharp.
Yeah.
But I feel like somebody has sort of said to him, look at yourself in the mirror, you're a 6'2" powerhouse unit.
Absolute tank.
Get the ball, don't try and step over anything fancy, get the ball, play quickly and use your physical attributes because that's what his strengths are. If you think back to all the good things he's done in his career, it's all been literally getting the ball and running at people. No, not much skill involved, let's be honest, but using what his skills are, which are his physical size, his speed, his strength, to intimidate opponents.
I think he's been good. I think the systems that he's played in the last couple of games have suited him.
The 4-3-3.
Playing in a three in the midfield, and him playing especially on the right of the three, not only helps him because it gives him the license to pick the ball up and drive at the midfield, which is a frightening thing. I wouldn't want him running at me. But also, him being in the team gives us a good aspect for Trippier, because when he gets forward, Sissoko's got the discipline to let Trippier go and do what he's good at going forward. So I think he always had the potential. It's just taking him a little while to find where he fits in our team.
Yeah. Hopefully he can put a bit of a run together now and play like this for the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, you know, the game's coming thick and fast. But, you know, it's a squad game and we need him.
I just wanted to talk as well about the state of Wembley. Yeah. The NFL branding everywhere, the markings still on the pitch, the state of the pitch. It was embarrassing to see it. And you think, like, they would have at least painted over the NFL logo. It was just, I was, when I got there and saw the state of it, I was a bit like, oh, this is bad.
There is absolutely no way the NFL would allow Premier League logos to be seen.
They would be buzzing the NFL with it.
It should have been green paint all over it. Of course, we knew it was going to be bad. It was the circumstances, the way the fixtures worked out. You know, we could have played City on the Friday, the previous Friday, but it's just the way the fixtures all worked out. And with Europe, it all went against us, and playing obviously the League Cup midweek as well. UEFA, worryingly for me, are going to have a look at the pitch on Monday, and it's not going to be a lot better. And we could be in trouble over it if it's really not up to scratch.
I think about some of the teams that play in the Champions League in the state of their stadiums.
I don't appreciate the effort that Wembley have put in for us as a club. We're a huge European club. We've put so much more publicity to this incredible stadium.
Yeah.
They had over 24 hours to make changes to that pitch. They're not going to make it pristine, but it looked like they didn't even care.
Yeah, what did they actually do?
I think green paint on all the numbers.
That would have made a little difference. Yeah. It was very, very poor.
They're saying that NFL stands for not finish lane, weren't they?
The club have also come out in the last week and announced that all of our home games up until and including Wolves on the 29th of December are all going to be played at Wembley, which is more disappointing news, but it's not surprising because anybody that knows anyone that works there or has seen pictures of the inside, it is so far away from being finished, that stadium, that even stuff in the new year is going to be a challenge. They're throwing crazy money at contractors. There are people that are actually quitting their full-time jobs, taking a six-month contract to work at the Tottenham Stadium and making more money in those 6 months than they would have done in the year in their job, which is remarkable, remarkable.
It's really disappointing that we're still at Wembley, but I think now's the time we've all got to stop moping about it, including me. And we've got to get on it. We've got to traipse up there and we've got to get behind the team.
Which I think we're doing, by the way. The players, the players, excellent. The
players must feel the same way. All our games have been away now. Well, we played probably 60, 70 games away nearly now.
If let's say hypothetically, we're going to be at Wembley for the whole season this year, hypothetically, would you rather the club come out and say, we're going to be there for the rest of the season, or would you rather them do what they keep doing and doing it in drips and drabs?
Do it in drips and drabs.
Would you prefer that? So you'd prefer at the end of December them to say, we're playing all the games until end of February and then so on and so on?
I'd prefer them to be honest with us.
I think I would, because I think otherwise everyone's going to go into meltdown.
And they need to be honest with us from the start. Like you said, anyone that knows anything about a humongous scale building project like the ground is, and think about 18 months ago, White Hart Lane was still standing.
Yeah.
And you've got to put into perspective the amount of time that it takes and appreciate how quickly they've done what they have done. Yeah. It's not the builders' fault that it's not ready. It's the board, it's Daniel Levy and the board's fault that they're not being honest with us from the start.
I think unrealistic deadline.
Yeah, just be honest with the fans. I think it's extraordinary the work that's been done in 18 months. It's unbelievable when you look at it.
Yeah.
And the final game that we need to talk about is the second time that we've gone to the London Stadium in the last 10, 11 days. Exactly. This time to play West Ham in the Cup. And it happened again.
It did.
That's three consecutive wins for us now at the London Stadium. Two this season and the League One last year. We won there 3-2 last year, so three in a row, which is excellent. There were changes made to the lineup. So Gazzaniga came in goal. We had Foyth playing at the back, Walker Peters playing at the back. Aurier came in as well, hasn't played that much this season. Llorente was up top. I was really pleased to see Eriksen and Dele Alli back, and we look such a better team with Dele Alli in it. It's incredible. But we were outstanding, again, from minute one to minute 90. We controlled the game, we passed the ball well. I thought Harry Winks had a great game. He transitioned the play from side to side, excellent, ran at the opposition. Son was back in, scored two goals, two really good goals as well. The strike on the first goal, where it's played to him, and he just hits it with his left foot in the top corner, is an absolute blinder. The second goal, Dele Alli picks the ball up, plays a lovely ball through, difficult for the defender to deal with because he's off balance, but he's poor defending. Son gets it, he's running clean through on goal. I actually thought he'd messed up the chance because he couldn't get the ball out of his feet and he was right on top of the keeper, but round the keeper, ball in the back of the net at 2-0. And then we looked so comfortable, and it's what you were saying earlier, Sam, about it looked training ground, keeping it, no tempo from the opposition, game's done. Let them back in with a goal, set piece.
Silly goal.
Really, really poor goal at 2-1. And then it felt like there was going to be an onslaught. I was thinking, right, here we go, brace yourself, the last 20 minutes are going to be a fight. We pretty much go straight at the other end. Llorente, who he hasn't played much. I'm not his biggest fan. He had a good game. Yeah. I thought he played well. You've got to credit players when held the ball up well, linked the play nicely. Yeah. And I also felt like we played to his strengths a bit more.
There's no point having him on the pitch if you're not going to play to his strengths. Yeah. I think that's been a problem with him. I'm not the biggest fan of him at all, but I think it doesn't help when you try and play as if Kane's up front. You can't. You have to play to his strengths.
That's right.
Yeah, but he took his goal.
He took his goal really nicely. To be honest, it was a good performance from Spurs, but it's what I expect playing a rubbish, poor side.
Yeah.
What should happen.
I think there's a few things to come out of the game. A lot of positives. You have to think about our starting lineup did have 9-4 internationals in it, apart from Walker Peters and the goalkeeper.
But there's no squad depth.
And there's no squad depth, is what everyone says. And you know, you've got Rose still on the sidelines, injured, and Vertonghen. You know, arguably you have got a double team. You know, you've got your 22 players. You know, they might not be at City standard, but they're not far short of it. You mentioned earlier about central defence and about Vertonghen and Alderweireld, and I thought the two in central defence were excellent. Yeah. Both of them had cracking games.
And they've never played together either.
No,
before.
And I thought, you were saying, Jack, when we was watching it the other night, with Sanchez and the coaching he must be getting, because the positioning on some of them crosses where he was absolutely spot on. And the clearances the two of them made, the last-ditch tackling some of them made, it was a real, real, real big positive for me, that was.
I think Foyth needs to get insane amounts of credit for what he did in that game. For someone that's so young, he's come over from Argentina, a big, big move for him. And to come in and show that level of maturity in games like that that are not easy to play for foreign centre-halves, it's not a nice place to go, West Ham. I thought he was outstanding. And you talk about moving on and the next team that's coming through, you're looking at moving Jan and Toby on. Your two centre-halves are sitting at the club already. Mm. Without a doubt, Foyth and Sanchez are the two to lead us forward.
I look at Foyth and I actually think I could definitely, rest of this season and next season, see him being utilised in midfield. Because the way he takes the ball, his passing range is brilliant. But like I said, he gets the ball at the back and just glides past people, which is interesting because he's a young man, he's 20, 21 years of age, max. He's only really been playing centre-half the last couple of years, which I found fascinating, that his whole career growing up as a footballer, he's been an attacking midfielder or a centre-forward. which I think is incredible. So,
yeah,
to
so strange.
You know, I've only recently made that transition to centre-half is extraordinary. And like you said, some of the challenges, but the all-round play, reading the game, being in the right position, getting rid of danger before it's even
there.
You
know, watching an English centre-half play, an old-fashioned English centre-half, which was brilliant. It was like having Dawes back in the
he
side.
He did make a Ledley King moment.
He did.
Where he sprints back.
The tackle.
Last-ditch tackle, and then they score from the resulting corner. Just like what happened with Ledley in the tackle against Iron Robin. Oh, exactly the same. Brilliant challenge, score from the resulting corner.
Forgot about that. There was one bit before where he, where they'd made it 2-1, and we kicked off and it come back to him. You expect any young player just to launch it, you know. And he took a touch and took it wide of the West Ham player, and I thought, that was good, you know. And played it to feet, and we didn't give the ball away straight away, and, you know, the crowd is up, and, you know, you got the silly bubble machine going everywhere, you know. So it was good. I'm really pleased. I like the reaction of the West Ham fans, and the third goal went in. There was a lot of arm waving at the front and that, and a lot of disgruntled people. And obviously a lot of people dressed as white seats towards the end.
Halloween, wasn't it? So it must have been
a thing. Yeah, they all went dressed as white
and then
seats,
a mention as well to Oliver Skip, who got on to make his debut. So again, another young player. He's in massive regards with everyone at the club. You know, I mean, 18 years old. He plays in the 23s pretty much every week, and he's a key player for them. He looks like a real excitement. You could see he was obviously buzzing to be on the bench.
Nervous,
but then when he was told he was going on, he looked as white as those seats, didn't he?
I love that, though. It's brilliant to see players that are passionate about playing for this club. And I feel like the majority of our team is filled with that now. Players that have got a connection to the club and want to play for the shirt. It's really good to see.
I think funny thing for me today at work was I was working 5 minutes from the ground today. Literally, I could have walked to the ground in 5 minutes. I was on the Olympic Park and driving around seeing the ground there today really, really made me smile.
But a fantastic result.
Yeah,
you know
brilliant.
What?
Brilliant.
To have gone to West Ham, as better as we are than them, to have gone there twice in 10, 11 days and have won both of them games, that's excellent. You know, that shows real maturity from us. I think I said to you last night, if you'd have offered me a draw in the league and a win in the cup before those games, I probably would have taken that. Would have, just knowing that West Ham for us away is a difficult game. So to go there and get two comfortable wins is excellent.
I think we need to finish the job now and beat them at home in the league and knock them out of the FA Cup as well.
Yeah, four victories. And obviously that win last night, we were rewarded with a quarter-final tie.
Nice, easy draw.
Away to Arsenal, which is, what a draw. That's fantastic.
It was a disaster, let's be honest.
You all want Burton at home. That's the draw you want. But for me, like,
you've got to beat the best teams to win it.
You're in the
top. This is what these moments are about.
You've got to beat Chelsea or City or Woolwich.
You said the best teams, though, and I don't think Arsenal are. They're not the best team in it, and I think it's a great opportunity for us to just remind Arsenal who the best team in North London is and put our foot down with them and go there and win at the Emirates. Gives us a good opportunity to do that as well.
I actually think the fact that it's away is better for us.
I think
if we'd have played them at home at Wembley, that would have been a tougher game.
The Milton Keynes.
Yeah, it'd have been a tougher game. What will be interesting about that tie will be what teams both sides put out. Because if Arsenal hadn't drawn Tottenham, they wouldn't put out the side that they're going to put. They'll go strong, we will go strong. Because you can't not in that game.
No, I want a full
this
strength.
You can't not in that
this
game.
Is where, this is where you want Arsene Wenger back. Because he would have rested everyone for Christmas.
Yeah.
But you have got to bear in mind that is coming up the Wednesday before Christmas. And you've then got four more games over the Christmas period. So I think that will have a little bit of a bearing on the team.
I think
personally,
we play Burnley, don't we, a few days before.
We've got Burnley, yeah, on the Saturday. It'd be Woolwich on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. And then we've got Everton on the Sunday. But then we play again Tuesday.
Is that the Barcelona?
Then we play again, then we play again Wednesday and Saturday at Wembley.
But with Burnley a few days before at home,
I want to see
in,
the full
in my opinion, this League Cup, you're in the quarterfinals, and the fact we're playing Arsenal now needs to be prioritised around those sets of fixtures. So if we've got three games in 8 days, I actually now want to see us say, okay, fine, the cup in that period of games is the priority. And the fact that it's Arsenal. If we'd have had Burton at home, you could have played a lot of fringe players again and got through. But the fact is we haven't. We've got Arsenal. And like what you say, Sam, we're going to be playing Arsenal twice in December away. Imagine going there and taking two wins. What a statement that would be.
And we've also, we know where we are in the Champions League by then as well. So, you know, if we're out of that, we can prioritise, you know, because I think the Thursday Cups are, you know, we could end up playing Arsenal in the Thursday Cup, maybe.
I'm all for us being in the Europa League. I would rather us get in the Europa League than finish fourth in our group, because the Europa League, one, is another trophy to fight for. It's another route into the Champions League, because you don't quite know where you're going to finish up. And when you've got a squad as big as ours, that's a good thing. You want to be playing every 4 or 5 days. It's sharpness. It's better to be doing that.
I think it is sometimes, yeah.
I don't buy all the fitness worries and doubts. The professional footballers, they're more than capable of doing it. Like you say, our squad's more than capable. I think this Arsenal game needs to be the priority for that month. We should have a full strength team put out for that game.
And I think we will.
And I think we will. I have faith in Pochettino, and I have faith in the squad that will go there and win. Because I think we're a better team.
Let's also see what the ticket allocation is.
It won't be what we expect, because it never is. Because of security, we won't be getting
4,000 tickets. Yeah. Something.
Yeah. But he actually, in my opinion, went with a stronger side at West Ham than I thought he was going to. Attacking wise, anyway. With Son, Eriksen, Ali.
Yeah, I thought he juggled the two games really
perfectly.
City and West Ham. Arguably, we could have had the draw against City. And I think the players that he played, and he used players, you know, Ali and Eriksen coming back from injury, you know, they had 70 minutes and 80 minutes. Yeah, it was a good... After the disappointment, I think, of PSV and then City, I think it's not been a terrible week.
It was good to bounce back. Yeah. And we've got Wolves at the weekend. So we play Wolves away Saturday night football. Yep. So it's 7:45 kickoff. Wolves they started the season fantastically. Newly promoted side. They took points off City and they went to Old Trafford and got a draw. So some fantastic results for them. They've dipped recently. I think a lot of teams have sort of figured out how to play against them. I think the first 11 games of the season, Wolves named an unchanged side.
Yes.
So I think now he's going to have to start tweaking the players, the system a little bit. But that's not an easy game at all going there.
They're really difficult.
But what I think suits us is they're a good footballing side. Yeah. They get the ball down, they want to play. And I like to think if they say to us, OK, let's have an open game of football.
Might be a contest.
That we should be better.
What do we think about Saturday night football? Because I know my old mate in Stockport, Cole, he's not a big fan of it.
I like it
personally, because it gives you all day to do things and then you settle down and watch the football court. Right,
as long as we win, I don't mind what time Spurs play.
What a brilliant answer. What are your predictions for that Wolves game? I think we'll go there and win. I think we'll keep a clean sheet, which would be nice. I could see us going there and winning 2-0.
Yeah, I'd say that as well. 2-3-0, I think it'd be comfortable.
3-1, I'm not comfortable with us keeping clean sheets.
2-0 upset piece, 2-1.
Oh yeah, and a panic, and then we'll nick it. Yeah, I'll take 1-0 now.
Yeah, any
win. Yep. We need to, you know, up the top of the table, we can't afford the teams to get 7-8 points in front of us. We know how hard that is to make up.
Yeah. It's time for the We Are Tottenham Hotspur quiz.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur.
So, as usual, Simon Mitchell, the quiz master, has sent this one in. So, for anybody that hasn't listened to this bit before, I will give you a game that Spurs have played. It can go as far back, pretty much, since records began. I'll give you the date, the year, the formation we played. Yeah. I'll give you about 6 of the players that started for us, and then you've got to try and work out the rest of that team. Mm-hmm. So, the game that we're doing today is 6th of March, 2011. Wolves 3, Tottenham 3. What's the game?
Kevin Doyle.
Good knowledge. We played a 4-4-2 formation Spurs that day. So the goalkeeper in that game is a question mark. The defence is right back was Alan Hutton.
Yeah.
Centre halves, Michael Dawson, William Gallas.
Yeah,
quality partnership.
Left back, Benoit Asuikoto.
Yeah,
great left back.
Right hand side of midfield is a question mark.
Yeah.
Left-hand side of midfield was Luka Modric.
Oh,
yeah.
Both the centre midfielders are question marks.
Yeah.
Centre forwards, one was Jermaine Defoe, and the other is a question mark. So you need to get the goalkeeper, the right midfielder, both centre midfielders, and the centre forward.
Right, that's great. It's 2011. That's the year we were first in the Champions League. 2010-2011. So it's Redknapp.
Okay. Great knowledge.
So,
and the Kevin Doyle.
Kevin, didn't he get Yeah.
Kevin Doyle got a brace for Wolves in that game.
So yeah. Go for the keeper first.
I'm going to say Friedel.
Friedel.
Was not Friedel.
Okay.
Gudicini.
Wasn't Gudicini.
I'm trying to think of
it's not a. It's the goalkeeper is not a trick one. He's the goalkeeper that played.
Robbo would have left by then, wouldn't
Gomez.
He?
Gomez
is your goalkeeper. So you've now got Gomez in goal. You've got your defence.
Got his back four.
Hutton, Dawson, Galatasaray, Cotto. Modric's on the left. So you need your right midfielder and then your two central just midfielders.
To the midfield, basically. What was Crenshaw be playing?
If it's the Champions League,
yeah.
Not Van der Vaart.
I'd go with Aaron Lennon on the right.
Not Aaron Lennon on the right.
Okay. Okay, so the two central midfielders and up.
Try and think about that game, because you remember Kevin Doyle scoring. Can you remember anything else about that game?
Tommy Huddleston.
No, not Tommy Huddleston.
I need a pen and a bit of paper.
Jermaine Defoe in that game, who we know was up front, scored two lovely 25-yarders edge of the box, top corner,
I
top
remember
corner.
That, yeah.
Shall I give you a clue?
No, go on then.
The right-hand side midfielder, the South African.
Stephen Pienaar.
Great knowledge. Stephen Pienaar was playing right inside the midfield.
I'd have never got that.
Was Crouch up front?
Wasn't Crouch.
Ooh.
Two centre midfielders. One of them is a current pundit.
JJ.
Jermaine Genus. And the other one is Brazilian.
Sandro.
Bang on. And then the centre forward alongside Defoe, number 9 was his shirt number Berbatov. At the time. Not Berbatov.
Not Mido. Oh, Freddie Canute.
Not Freddie Canute. No, he actually scored the third goal in this game. You are going too far back.
Way too far. Number 9. Pavlyuchenko.
Roman Pavlyuchenko.
Very good.
So that team, 6th of March 2011, Wolves 3, Tottenham 3. Gomez in goal, back four of Hutton, Dawson, Gallas, Asui Koto. Midfield of Pienaar, Sandro, Genus and Modric. And then up front was Defoe and Pavlyuchenko. Defoe got 2.
Did Doyle get 2?
Doyle got 2. So it went 1-0 Wolves. Doyle scored after about 5 minutes. Defoe got 2 in 2 minutes. So we were 2-1 up. Doyle got a penalty right on half time. So it was 2-2 at half time. Right at the start of the second half, Pavlyuchenko. And then 85th, 86th minute, Stephen Fletcher off the bench.
I really can't remember that game.
Doyle
brace. I can't remember that game.
Yeah.
Well, what was the date of it?
6th of March 2011. I remember that game so vividly because Defoe scored 2 goals.
Like
25 yards, they were not goals that Defoe would ever normally score. So thanks, Simon, as always.
Very good.
A quick fantasy football update. So the top 3 in the Echoes of Glory League is still as it was a couple of weeks ago. So Richard Healy, James Lamont and Dan Hearn making up the top 3 as a holiday, Dan.
Where's Abbas?
Nowhere to be seen. It's probably a language score or something like that tonight. That's where it would be. So that's fantasy football, so keep up the good work, you guys in the top 3 there. We've got a few listener questions to finish up. So Giles, who was on the show a few weeks ago, that AVB special.
Very good.
If you had to choose Poch or Kane to leave and join Madrid in January, who would it be? Sam, I'll come to you with that one.
Poch.
Reason being?
I could see it happening. I could see the move happening. I couldn't see Kane leaving.
Poch, because you can't sell your best players. We've done that. We've made that mistake.
I feel bad saying that because he's everything the club stands for. But
Big Adam Tindall has said, Pochettino, where is his head at? Fans and players are still with him, but is the club on the same page? Come to you with that one.
I think we are. I think we're all on the same page. I think it's just frustration. I think we was all hoping to be in the new ground now, and I think it's putting the project back a little bit by not being in the new ground. We don't know where we're going and what we're doing, and I think that's the way he feels.
Yeah. Another one from Big Tindall. Sam, this one's for you. January transfer window. Can we pull another Van der Vaart out of the bag? Do you think we'll see many exits?
I don't think we'll see many exits. I don't think we'll see any exits. I think Pochettino, and I think Levy to an extent, will be eager to do business in January to make up for the summer. But again, I think it's very, very difficult to sign players for the right money who are the right quality to suit the team. And I'd much rather us not sign anyone than waste money on players that aren't going to improve the first 11.
I think a lot depends what we get from the Champions League. That'll have a, you know, that that would have some basis on what, where we're going to spend the money. I wouldn't rule out maybe a contract rebel being sold if the money was right, either a Dembele or even Alderweireld or Rose. If someone come in with the right amount of money, I wouldn't rule out someone being sold for 35, 40 million.
Just a quick one there. You mentioned players that will improve the first 11. We all know that is quite challenging to do.
It's really hard.
But if I throw some names out there for you, because a lot of people talk about this and say, well, who? Throw some names at
me. Yeah, go on.
Ross Barkley.
Okay.
Kovacic. Both gone to Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Both are not guaranteed starters, but have definitely strengthened Chelsea in those areas.
You should have bought Ross Barkley.
Would either of those players have strengthened Tottenham?
Yes, Ross Barkley, definitely.
No, not at the time with Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley, under Sarri, sort of revitalised his career. At the time, and the way Ross Barkley was playing, I don't think it would have been a good signing. Now, definitely, he's playing really well. He's English. He'd be good in our team, but at the time, I don't think so. And I don't think Kovacic... I think he's a good player, but I don't really think he's in it to progress in the team. I think he's on loan to impress Real Madrid so he can go back and play from next season.
My point on that, the reason I asked that question is, I think Tottenham would be a better team with either of those players as part of the squad.
Yeah, we would. Yeah.
I think finding that player that's going to break into the first team at the minute, that's difficult.
But
what I would say is, if you look at City, you look at Liverpool, they've gone out and bought players,
yeah,
and they're not necessarily starting.
No.
City went and bought Mahrez. I think that game against us, one of the few starts he's had, but they're a better side with him.
Yeah.
And the same with Liverpool. They bought Chieta and they bought Fabinho. They're not starting regularly, but they're a better side with them.
Yeah.
That's my point on it, that I agree. You'll do well. You'll do well to find anyone that would, one, get in our first team, but that, two, we could realistically get. Well, I don't think
for the money as well.
Realistically, I don't think there's anybody we could go and buy that would be good enough to go straight in the first team.
No, probably not.
But then I do think that there are players that we could have got, as the names I've mentioned, that would have strengthened us. Even a Jack Grealish. It would strengthen you in other areas.
Yeah.
It's not going to come in and say to Ericsson, you're not in the side anymore.
No.
Yeah.
But I still think... I think they're the type of players in January that we will look to bring in.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't think...
We do need to bring someone in,
I don't think it's worth it for the money that you would spend on these players. You look at someone like Wilfried Zaha, who I would really like to the club. He would have improved it. But for the ridiculous money that they were talking, it's probably not worth it. So you've got to get
that,
some
perspective. See, that kind of transfer... I would love,
yeah,
but realistically, that's not going to happen.
No,
we're not going to put 70 mil down on the table for a player.
And the wages, that's not going to happen. Everyone else is going to be whinging about the wages.
But I do think that there are players, the ones I mentioned, that we could realistically financially got,
that
would have improved us as a side.
I totally agree with that.
Final question is from Ricardo on Facebook. And this is Pochettino's recent quote. So, my feeling is not the best feeling. I've had better feeling in previous seasons. Still, we are not showing that level to be a real contender. That is just my opinion. Do you agree with what Poch is saying as a statement?
Yeah, I do in a way. As I said, previously said a few minutes ago, I think it's just where the club is at the moment. I think we're all a bit frustrated, but we've all got to pull together and get behind the team.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We're not playing the best football. We're not getting the greatest results in terms of goals and the way we're playing, but we're up there. We're, 5 points off the top of the league?
Yeah.
We've got a chance to get into the semi-finals of one of the cups already. We're not in as bad of a situation as Tottenham fans are saying we are. And like you said, Dad, we've got to pull together, get behind the team... Because this is an extremely important season.
What we do
for
best
us
at Tottenham, we all, we get behind our team, unlike other London clubs.
It's going to be another big week, but remember, whatever happens, future's bright, future's lily white. Come on, you Spurs!
I always thought there was very, very many people interested in football, and I always thought that football was a very important game. But I never realised until today just how important it is.
Whether the Wonder Boys of White Hart Lane are or are not the team of the century can't possibly be more than a matter of opinion.
Well, they're the finest team in Great Britain and one of the best in the world.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur. The curve of the ball, the billow of the net, the beating of the trap and the picking of the lock, the swiftness of thought, the lightness of touch. We are Ginola, Greaves, Klinsmann. We are the collective gasp, the intake of breath, the flick, the trick, the 30-yard free kick. We are Hoddle, Mabbott and King. We are the lob, the chip, the dummy and the volley. We are the hat-trick, the scissor kick. We are Bill Nick.
That is schoolboy's own stuff.
We are the outside of the boot, the inside of the net, and those seconds that last forever.
Van der Vaart to level it up. Raphael van der Vaart, 2-2. It's quite a game, isn't it always?
We are Jennings, Defoe and Perryman. Glory past, glory future. What was, what is, what's next? We are Blanchflower, Ardiles and Bale. We are about winning with a flourish. We are about winning with style. We are about the glory of the game. Daring to try, daring to risk, daring to dream. To dare is to do.